The idea behind the cure was meant to really be a blueprint for Congress to look at healthcare and say, here are some things that you could actually do that would impact, maintain our free market system, but lower the cost of healthcare. And it's funny because I remember right after I wrote it, I had an independent blogger, write a review saying, how in the world could you take on healthcare in less than 500 pages? And I said, well, two things there. One is, nobody wants to read a 500 page book on healthcare. And two, I had to write it for Congress. So if I could have put pictures in it, I would have, because I needed it to be so simple that even Congress could understand.
Welcome to the Rockstars Rocking Podcast, powered by Voluntary Disruption, a show dedicated to people who are crushing their business and life goals. These are bite-sized conversations with leading rock stars in their respective industry who are pumped to share their story to help drive you to the next level. So, are you ready to rock? Speaking of rock stars, here's your host, Eric Silverman.
Hey, rock stars, welcome back to another episode of Rockstars Rockin'. If you're listening to me on a podcast, not watching, I just slapped my fingers together and made a hashtag because it's hashtag Rockstars Rockin'. And boy, do I have a rock star with us today. Everybody, welcome my good friend Seth Denson out of McKinney, Texas, a suburb of Dallas. Welcome, Seth. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Hey man, I appreciate you taking the time. I know you're super busy. My goodness, talk about media. For those of you that don't know Seth, let me tell you something. If there's a news network that you've heard of, if the first one that just came to your mind, yes, that one, the one that just came to your mind, Seth has been featured on it and probably featured multiple times, from Fox News to One America to CBS to ABC. You name it, he's all over the place and he's exploding in the best possible way. And let me tell you how I first met Seth. So Seth, a lot of people wouldn't even realize that you're, of course, in the insurance business, but that you actually sell insurance for a living, right? That's, I believe, you'll have to correct me, but I believe that's how you pay your bills. And the reality, gang, is Seth actually was up for one of five nominations for Benefits Pro Broker of the Year in 2019, one of the five finalists. And that is a pretty darn prestigious honor in the benefits world, like myself and he. There's how many thousands of benefit brokers and advisors, Seth? So that's when I first met you. Let me ask you a question. How do you tie in the explosive media that you're doing with insurance and employee benefits?
Well, thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it. I when I got your email, I was excited. Of all the media shows I do, I was really excited to get to be with you, man, because I respect the work that you do and in your platform. And so thank you. I was honored to be a rock star. So how do I tie it in? Listen, the reality is our industry has changed. So for those of us in the healthcare space, in the brokerage space, let me start by saying maybe how I got into this, right? So when I was in college, I changed my major a number of times. I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And it was a guidance counselor in college who said, well, what do you really like to do? And I said, I like to play golf. And most of the people that I knew that played golf were in the financial services or health insurance space. So that's effectively, and there's a long story there, but that's how I got into this space. I don't play golf anymore. I can't tell you the last time I played golf. I still love the game. I just don't get to do it. But I've made a conscious choice not to. And where I'm going with that is our industry has changed. So, almost 20 years ago when I got into the space, you could manage this business pretty well. Status quo was acceptable, right? And I love your book, Breaking the Status Quo, right? Because back in the day, that was acceptable and it was the lesser of evils. And this was the easiest 30-hour-a-week job you could ever have. But our industry has changed, at least for those that want to do something great and make an impact. And so for that reason, you have to be changing the way you approach the industry. And I say this all the time, placing insurance is the easy part. That takes that long. It's all the stuff you're doing the other 364 days a year that makes sure that you're doing the best work for your client. And so the beauty of that is, as we start to think about specifically healthcare and health insurance and the way that those two things work interdependently yet dependently upon one another, is that you need to be an expert of the healthcare game if you want to be an expert in the health insurance game. And when you go on Fox News or CNN or NBC or any of these networks that I'm regularly on, I've been interviewed alongside and debated people that wrote the Affordable Care Act. I have been on with former secretaries of Veterans Affairs, press secretaries, you name it. You kind of got to be on your game. And so the ability to take the research and the time and energy into that and apply it when we do our healthcare business and consulting for our clients, it's almost like you're getting to kill two birds with one stone, because you got to be good at one to be good at the other. And that's not also to say, though, that I have a really phenomenal staff that is better than me at everything that I do. And I remember a colleague telling me, a mentor of mine early on in my career, that when you get to the point in your career when you're hiring people that are smarter and better than you, you will know you have made it. And my friend, I will tell you, I am, my entire staff are people that are smarter and better than me.
I completely agree with that with respect to hiring the smartest talent to surround yourself with. And most likely, if they're really good, they're definitely smarter than you. You just happen to be the face for the camera. Or in my case, I just happen to be the ugly voice behind the TV. Listen, here's a question that I wanted to ask you. So I ordered The Cure. I have not read it yet. Full disclosure, I should have timed this properly and read it first, then had you on. But I've read a little bit about it. And tie that in, because your book is right up there, certainly with mine, but with Dave Chase's book and a lot of industry gurus that have written some books about changing healthcare. Talk about where that came from and how that came about.
Yeah, thank you. So I wrote what I would call the white paper that became the book it was as the Republicans were arguing the merits of the Affordable Care Act. So President Trump had just won the election, right? So Republicans have control of the House of Representatives, the Senate, and the White House. They're going to take on the Affordable Care Act, which was a campaign promise and something that Republicans had campaigned on for years. And I read the bill that they put forth, which was the BHCRA. And my staff and I, Andrew, my right hand, and we looked at it together, and it was like, yes, it isn't going to actually do anything to lower the cost of healthcare. It might give the Republicans a win for repeal and replace, but at the end of the day, it won't do anything. And then that became what we called skinny repeal or replace. And I actually wrote an article where I said that skinny repeal was like a skinny margarita, a tasteless, watered down version of the original that had no merit or substance in it. So I remember watching the debates on the floor, and then I, for those that follow politics closely, you know, the infamous John McCain was the no vote that stopped it and said, nope, the Affordable Care Act is here to stay. Skinny repeal is not going to happen. Here's what it is. And kudos to the late John McCain on that. And I apologize for any of your listeners who hate the Affordable Care Act. And I can tell you, I'm no big fan of it either. But replacing it with a bigger piece of garbage wasn't going to be valuable. And so I sat down that night and I wrote, if I had my way, what would be the things that I would tell Congress to do that would actually address the rising cost of healthcare? And so I wrote it, I sent it to my staff and my team, and like we do on most things, we collaborated on it. That later led to me getting to do a TED Talk. And I got to do that. And then not long thereafter, we were able to kind of put the finishing touches on the book and kind of take the white paper and expand upon it. So the idea behind The Cure was meant to really be a blueprint for Congress to look at healthcare and say, here are some things that you could actually do that would impact, maintain our free market system, but lower the cost of healthcare. And it's funny because I remember right after I wrote it, I had an independent vlogger, write a review saying, how in the world could you take on healthcare in less than 500 pages? And I said, well, two things there. One is, nobody wants to read a 500 page book on healthcare. And two, I had to write it for Congress. So if I could have put pictures in it, I would have, because I needed it to be so simple that even Congress could understand.
There you go. Well, if that's not a soundbite, I don't know what is. Thank you for that. Listen, let me ask you this. How do you have time to sell insurance? Like, well, what are you doing, man? You're on every news channel. You're on the internet news channels, Cheddar and Newsy and all those others. I mean, when do you sell insurance? I mean, I imagine you have a huge team behind you, but But talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things there. And I think that our sales approach is a little bit different than most. And I say this all the time, we try to not sell anything, rather we help people buy what they need. And we're not trying to change what they're buying, just how they're buying it. And the media certainly helps from a perspective of, I assure you, the phone's not ringing off the hook with people that say, oh, I saw you on Fox this morning and I want to do business with you. What it does do, though, is create some validation, right? Sure. Some third-party validation of, hey, this guy might know what he's talking about and his firm might know what they're talking about. Even though I can argue that sometimes mainstream media may not be well liked anymore and people might change their perception. But I also, from you hit the nail on the head on a couple of things. One is, like I said, I got a great staff. I got a great team that really helps support a lot of the detail-oriented work that goes into it. I am super regimented in my day. So my normal day starts anywhere between 4 and 4:30 in the morning. And I'm very scripted in how I structure my day, from, you know, what time I work out, what time I eat breakfast, what time I read medical briefings, to do research, to engage with my staff. And when I get off of that cycle routine, something goes awry, which is this whole coronavirus thing has been a little bit of a challenge in that. But so, you know, everything's very scripted and by the book. And I will tell you, I'm a terrible multitasker. I can't do it. Don't ever ask me. I have massive squirrel syndrome. And so that's where, you know, I have a great team, and I live and breathe by my calendar and documentation. And I don't sleep much. and fortunately, I don't require a whole lot of that, at least not until I hit that point where it's like, okay, I probably need to hibernate for a day. But it's a lot of energy, but it's a lot of focus on the few key things. And I used to try to be all things to all people and be the best at a lot of things. And, you know, a mentor of mine said, you know, that somebody that's good at a lot of things can be the master at none. So find out those things that you're really good at, and farm out the things that you're not. And so for me, that's really 4 or 5 things that I focus my attention on, and everything else, fortunately, I'm surrounded by somebody who can do that better than me.
So if I'm an employer group, right, and I have however many employees, by the way, what's your average size case?
You know, we write groups anywhere between 50 and 5,000 employees is kind of our target. We've got some that are bigger than that. We've got some that are smaller than that. I would say that in our wheelhouse is in that 100 to 500 space is kind of where we focus most of our attention.
So I'm a 250 person employer. I'm the CEO, and I book an appointment with GDP. Do I get Seth? What's it take to get Seth to go physically in person back when we were allowed to do that versus now, even if it's a Zoom call?
Yeah, so you do get Seth. And if you're fortunate enough, you'll get everybody that's not Seth, who's even better than Seth at this at GDP. But so we work in a team methodology around here. And while I might be the quote unquote pitch man, and certainly am involved, I'm still the chief strategist of our organization. I run our strategy team, but I've got a great group of strategists that work alongside me that, I, like I said, they're better than me at the strategy side of it. And so our normal process, by the way, we were doing virtual meetings when virtual meetings weren't cool. And so it's not uncommon for, I've got clients that have been clients for 5 or 6 years. I've never been on site to their location. Doesn't mean that it's not a GDP staff member hasn't been on site, but it doesn't always necessarily mean that I have to be. And so I will do on average anywhere between 5 and 7 Zoom or GoToMeeting or whatever format you want to use meeting a day. It does allow me to be in a lot of places at the same time. Now, that's also not to say that I don't, before coronavirus, spend a good chunk of my life on airplanes. Mm-hmm. I do. And so it's a combo of both. That said, if you looked at our client portfolio, for example, while we're based here in Texas, less than 30% of our clients are here in Texas.
That's awesome. That's incredible. Now, do you have an outbound team that makes cold and or warm calls, or is it all inbound?
The vast majority of our business is referral-based business, inbound to us. Early on in my career, when it was just Seth, party of one, when I started the firm in 2011, before I merged with my now partner, John Powder, it was a lot of outbound calls. It was smiling and dialing, and my name's Seth, how do you like me so far? And network meetings and all the things that I think are important for everybody to do. And you know, we have a young sales staff and we have an experienced sales staff. And I will tell you that our young guys, yeah, it's the same. You get out there and knock on the doors and pound the pavement and go to the network meetings and manage your time effectively. For our more senior producers and advisors, I mean, it's, you know, they're getting to work their Rolodex, so to speak. I just aged myself by calling it a Rolodex, but you know, they're working their contact lists, and the and I'm fortunate that in my particular portfolio, the vast majority of it, if not almost all of it, has been referral based.
That's awesome. Well, I tell you, if I was a new producer starting out in the insurance world, I'd want to be under you, because even if I was cold calling, the established and inherent credibility that you brought to your firm for their, well, your, but their betterment is just uncanny. So that's got to be a lot more helpful than, hey, I'm Eric with Joe's insurance agency up the street, I would imagine.
Yeah. And as you well know, my friend, I mean, your reputation matters anymore. And listen, that can be a double-edged sword, especially given some of the media outlets I've been on. I remember the first time I did CNN, I had a few people that were none too pleased that they saw my face on CNN. And, you know, for my conservative friends, I said, well, listen, I get it, but I was tired of preaching to heathens or to Christians. I was ready to go preach to some heathens. You know, I mean, you gotta make a joke out of it sometimes and recognize that, listen, at the end of the day, there's people on all lines of the spectrum. My primary focus is healthcare and trying to make our system more navigable, more effective for my clients. And guess what? Diseases don't have a political agenda. Neither will solutions to solve them. I'm willing to go anywhere and talk to anybody if they're willing to give me the microphone and say, how do you think we need to solve for this?
I love that. Love that. Well, listen, before we wrap up, I got to talk about our favorite sport, baseball. Yeah. Baseball season, we're recording it the week that baseball starts, 60 games. It's going to be a sprint to the finish. This will be released at some point soon. But talk about it. But tell me about baseball and your life.
So, listen, I think all life lessons you can sum up in the game of baseball, right? Teamwork. Fundamentals, make sure you use two hands. In other words, get your hands on whatever it is you're doing and focus on it. Like all these great, matter of fact, my dad growing up, I think he had a shirt, everything I ever needed to know about life, I learned playing baseball. And so baseball was not just America's pastime, it was the Denson's pastime growing up. And my brother played in college. I had opportunities to play in college. My dad was our coach growing up, and I loved baseball, and I still do to this day. And it is one of those things that I can't wait for it to come back because I miss it so much. I miss watching games. I miss going to games. And even in Texas, where it's miserable to go to games in the summer, you still do. I just can't wait for it to come back.
All right. I know you're a big Rangers fan. Tell us, how are your Rangers going to do in the shortened 2020 season? Because we don't need to talk about my Orioles. We already know how that's going to go.
So for longtime Rangers fans, which there aren't a lot, but we have this thing that we talk about, which is the curse of the All-Star break, which is usually our team is doing really, really well, and then the All-Star break comes and something happens. I'm hopeful that because we'll never get to the All-Star break, that maybe this is our year. So I'm excited. I like some of the fundamentals of our team. I would be remiss if here's the reality, I haven't been following it a lot, because you just don't know what's been going on. But we got a new stadium. It's supposed to be indoors. I'm hoping maybe some air conditioning can help. And so we'll see. But, you know, I'm always pulling for my Rangers. It's been a rough life as a fan, though.
All right. Well, welcome to being an Oriole fan in the year 2020 in the last couple of years. So I hear you on that. Well, listen, I appreciate it, Bud. This has been fantastic. Very insightful. I love getting to know you from a different perspective than what we all see on the traditional news media. I'm certainly not that. So real quick before we go, how can somebody reach you if they wanted to just ask you a question? If I'm an employer group or a colleague, broker, partner that wanted to pick your brain, are you up for that type of thing? How can they get in touch with you?
Always, man. And again, I love the platforms that you're on. And what I know about you, buddy, is that you're always willing to help others out. And same here. I always want to be helping people out any way I can. I'm passionate about our industry and what we're doing. But so all the normal platforms, right? I mean, the website is SethDenson.com. You can go there. You can find my book there, Amazon, any of those other places where you get your book. I'm on Twitter and YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn and, you know, all those. I don't have a TikTok. Apparently that's a thing now, but I'm not there. I mean,
I have a TikTok.
My kids are a little younger than yours. Not much, but a little bit. So I'm sure that that's in my future. But nonetheless, pretty much anywhere else. And fortunately for me, there's not a lot of Seth Densons out there. So I was able to pretty much grab my name as my username for most of those platforms.
All right. Well, all of us look forward to your future TikTok with your kids, because that's all I use it for with my 11-year-old daughter. All right. Well, listen, thanks again, Seth, for everybody here at Rockstars Rockin', hashtag Rockstars Rockin'. I'm Eric Silverman. That's Rockstar Seth Denson. Follow him on all platforms for social media. And as always, I don't want you to have a good day. I want you to make it a great day. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Rockstars Rocking Podcast. If you haven't done so already, make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you consume podcasts. And if you feel so inclined, please leave us a review. 5 stars would totally rock. Until next time, Rockstars, keep rocking.